It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairies, the beginning of fall. It's been cool, it's cool. Good sleeping weather. People crawl into bed at night. It's warm under the extra blanket if you're sleeping with somebody else. And you tuck yourself into your little envelope on these cool fall nights and you pull the blanket up to your chin. And whatever you were about to say by way of complaint or lament, you do not say, lying there in this blessed, blessed chill of the fall. It's been a gorgeous, gorgeous week. We're 2 weeks into the school year. Children come home. The parents ask them questions over supper, over the meatloaf surprise, which has cheese and chopped green pepper and tomatoes and whatever is sitting around in the fridge in it. They sit down to the meatloaf surprise, and the parents say, "How was school?" "Good." "What did you do today?" "Not much." "How was band?" "It was fine." "You glad you switched to trombone?" "Yeah." "What's your favorite subject?" "History." "Good. Anything else happen?" "Nope." And then, out of nowhere, after supper, the eighth grader asks the mother, "What makes something pornography?" She says, "Go ask your father." So the girl comes and sits down beside her father on the arm of his chair in the living room. He's reading the paper. And she tells him that she is going to become a vegetarian. It's a cleansing thing. "Good," he says. "Good." He picks an apple out of the dish, a Cortland apple, and he cuts it open and he cuts out the core and he hands her half of it. And he says, "Here you go. From the tree of knowledge. Good luck." That was Mr. and Mrs. Jensen with their eighth grader at home. They went off on a hot air balloon ride on Wednesday because it was his gift to her for her birthday, and also it was a peace offering after kind of a rugged spring and summer. Not that they've had big fights or anything. They just haven't seen that much of each other. They've been busy doing other things. He's been fishing a lot and by design. And he's been volunteering, and he built a Habitat for Humanity house, and he's gone off to help people who need a little handy help around the house. And she's been volunteering as well. Because they've come to a point in their marriage when they just don't have that much to say to each other, it seems. And they are of a romantic generation, a younger romantic generation, who believe that you should be each other's best friends if you are married. Their parents didn't think that, or their grandparents. Marriage was very practical back then. And people took a slightly cynical view of marriage. They told jokes that reflected that. That old joke, getting married for sex is like getting on a plane to London for the peanuts and pretzels, is an old joke in Lake Wobegon. People under 40 don't tell it. All those Ole and Lena jokes were about a sort of a cynical, dark view of marriage. Ole and Lena go out to dinner to celebrate their 25th anniversary, and she punches him in the shoulder, and she says, "That's for 25 years of bad sex." And he thinks about it, and then he punches her in the shoulder. He says, "That's for knowing the difference." Those are jokes of another generation. Ole and his good friend Sven walk into the house, and there on the living room floor is Lena making love with a stranger. They walk past them, Ole and Sven, and they walk back into the kitchen, and he opens up the refrigerator, and he offers Sven a beer. Sven says, "What about the guy in the living room?" Ole says, "He'll have to get his own beer." Ole lying on his deathbed, and he smells this wonderful smell of rhubarb pie from down in the kitchen, and he drags himself down the stairs and crawls on his belly to the counter, and there is Lena's rhubarb pie, and he lifts him and he reaches for it, and she whacks him across the head with a broom. She says, "That's for the funeral. Leave that alone." Those were jokes of an older generation, but Mr. and Mrs. Jensen, they believe that marriage is supposed to go on being romantic for year after year, and they've had a bad summer. So they went for a hot air balloon ride. It took off from Little Falls, the childhood home of Charles A. Lindbergh, and they were going to stop in at the Lindbergh boyhood home, and then he got a call from Pastor Liz asking him if he had a power drill with a reverse on it that could take out big screws. And he said, "Sure, sure." So he went over there to the parsonage. This is the fate of people who are competent and who have tools, is that you're always being called on to do things for other people. This is one thing that Mrs. Jensen is angry at him about, that he's always willing to go off and do things for other people, things that he doesn't even do around his own home. But he went off to the parsonage, and there was Pastor Liz, and she had this enormous plywood crate. It was about 6 feet long, and it was about 4 feet across, with all these little Phillips screws set in it. There were about 35 of them, and he took them out one after the other, and they lifted up the lid, and here was a whole bunch of styrofoam pads there. They peeled those out, and here was a frame, a big frame. It was a painting, and they took off the last piece of styrofoam, and Pastor Liz lifted it out. And it was a beautiful oil painting of Jesus standing on a frozen lake in his bare feet and smiling. Standing on a frozen lake in snow and smiling. And underneath the inscription, "Anyone can walk on water when the time is right." Mr. Jensen said, "Do you buy this? Did you buy this?" She said, "No, it's a gift." He said, "No, what I meant is, do you believe that? Do you buy it? That anyone can walk on water?" She said, "No, I don't." She said, it's a gift. But it's also, the painting is a gift from an old boyfriend I knew back in seminary. Carlos was his name. Brazilian Lutheran, if you can believe such a thing. And we were in seminary together, and I would have married him, except that he didn't have a telephone or an address. He really took the gospel literally, and he lived in the back of a white Dodge van, and he had two changes of clothing, and that's all. And so you never could find him. He decided after he was done with seminary that faith and language are incompatible. So he took a vow of quiet, and he became a mime, and then he became a painter. And nobody has any idea where he is. He's just driving around the country somewhere. "Well, we'll hang it over here," she said. "Put it up." It was Jesus smiling, and it wasn't just sort of a faint, beatific smile. He was sort of grinning, actually. They'd never seen our Lord grinning before. "Is there a place in Scripture where that's found?" said Mr. Jensen. "No, I don't think so," she said. "It's a revelation." So she hung it up. So they took off, Mr. and Mrs. Jensen, and they drove up to Little Falls. They didn't have time to go see Charles A. Lindbergh's boyhood home. They just went out to the cornfield, which is out west of Little Falls, and there was a crew of of six people who were inflating the hot air balloon. It was a sort of a pale blue and white balloon, and they were holding it down with ropes as they pumped the air in and as the burner was heating it up, and they shook hands with the pilot, Bob, and there was the wicker basket, and it was up in the air, and they climbed in. Mr. Jensen clamped his hands, and Mrs. Jensen stepped in and up into the wicker basket, and the burner blasted, and up into the air they went, and they drifted across the fields, across this perpendicular grid of roads and fields. They moved at a slight angle at about 200 feet altitude. There were three people riding their horse down a gravel road, and they passed over them silently. They passed over a boy. They saw a boy on a back porch who was peeing into a Weber cooker. He was peeing into hot coals, and steam came up. He appeared to be about 13 years old. He was all by himself, cars passing, and they drifted slowly over. And then they drifted over a lake, and Mrs. Jensen pointed down. There was a canoe. She pointed down at that canoe. It was the Krebsbach. It was Carl and Margie Krebsbach. It was Lake Wobegon. They were drifting at 200 feet altitude silently over their own hometown. They drifted over the downtown. There was Ralph in front of the grocery store, and he was cranking up the awning. There was Cliff standing out behind the mercantile, burning something in his incinerator. It looked like canceled checks or something. There was somebody who was pouring hot tar on the roof of the sidetrack tab. They drifted across. There were people standing in front of the Chatterbox Cafe. There was the statue of the Norwegian. There was the Sons of Canute Temple. There was the Lutheran Church. They drifted across the town. They heard the Petersons arguing, standing out in their driveway with their hands on their hips. And she was saying, "How can you even think about going to Las Vegas for a weekend? How can you even think about that? Don't you realize?" And they drifted on silently. They drifted on. They could hear people singing in duet down below, a man and a woman. They couldn't make out where they were under a tree. "Where? I wish I had someone to love me. I wish I had someone to care. I wish I..." And then they were passed over. They could hear the clanking of the chain on the flagpole alongside the high school. And they passed just over the high steeple of Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility, the cross, just below them. They just cleared it. Bob, their pilot, didn't say a word. They didn't speak to each other. What was there to say? They passed over. They could see two young people sitting on swings in the schoolyard, looking as if they were just about to kiss each other. They passed on, and then they were beyond the town. They passed over a pickup truck parked on the gravel road just north of town. It was full of sweet corn and full of cucumbers and pumpkins to sell. A boy sitting there reading a book, waiting for business to come. They passed over, and they turned, and they looked behind them to see their town as it was disappearing on a fall afternoon. We live life forwards. We think about it backwards. Onward they went, not saying a word to each other. What was to say? Pleasant or unpleasant? What was to say? There was nothing to say. It was all so clear. It is so beautiful. And it is over much too soon. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children are above average.